Hello and welcome back to another episode of The More From Grace. I'm your host today, Henry, and I'm joined as ever by Ricky Westerby. How are you?
Not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Absolutely still buzzing off to Saturday. What a day that was.
Oh, what a day it was indeed. We'll get on to that first, shall we? England crushed Ireland 88-10. Just the back line was on fire. Abby Dow hat-trick, Ellie Kildon hat-trick. Even Jess Breach, she backed herself a couple as well.
Meg Jones.
Yeah, Meg Jones playing in the centre, just also the versatile fly half as well. Can England be stopped?
No. That's the answer. Unfortunately, the competition is just nowhere near on England's level. And I don't think it's not England's fault by any means. They're just streaks ahead, aren't they? And the competition is just too far away.
Well, this was something that was raised in the press conference, actually. One of the journalists, Fee Thomas, actually asked John Mitchell afterwards and said, would this be under more scrutiny if this was in the men's competition, a big like 88-10 blowout? And I think, yeah, you can't discredit England. You can't tell England to hold back because they've done so well. But it is a warning sign to the other teams that actually they need to, if they want to be competitive and they want to grow the women's game, they've got to keep up and they've got to stay at that level. Obviously, we say it's going to be one-sided. We say that no one can stop England, but we will get on to later the upcoming France versus England match. But certainly, Ireland couldn't stop England.
No, I thought just in general, Ireland were... I don't think poor is the right word because it's just not at the races. I think that's the perfect way to put it. There was a lot of missed tackles, I have to say, and that was quite poor. And I think head coach Scott Beaman was not very happy with that, but he also addressed that this England team is just streaks ahead and this is a young Irish team that are looking to build. So I think you've got to put it into perspective slightly.
Yeah, he was definitely interesting at the end. He was kind of saying this is a project for Ireland, that they know they're not going to be there just yet, but actually playing with these experiences of playing at Twickenham in front of 48,000 people is great for Irish rugby. Even if they're getting pummeled, it's great learning experience for the players to be in that position where they can't hear their teammates, where they've got to play off those visual cues. England throughout the week were training with big speakers playing crowd noise so they could get used to it a little bit earlier. But obviously, it's no substitute for just being there at the moment. And yeah, what did you think of the crowd? Because obviously, where we were sat, between all the journalists, it looked like a good day out.
Oh, it was class, mate, honestly. What was it, 48,500 maybe?
I think it's 48,700, roughly. So good.
I thought it was brilliant. And obviously, the half-time entertainment was... tier for me. I don't know about you, but oh, love a bit of what Sophie Ellis Bextor.
Bit just of murder on the dance
song.
Floor.
Only one song.
Well, she
yeah,
sort of did.
What a day.
Yeah, she did a sort of medley of all her three hits, and yeah, the crowd seemed to love it. I remember being at Harlequin's big game where they had Joel Corry and everyone was sort of dancing in the stands, and it was sort of reminiscent of that. But and hopefully it will be again with Jess Glynn on on Saturday, but I think this is the way you have to market rugby. Obviously, I'll give it a little cheeky plug. I've written an article this week. It's gone up today about how rugby and how the Red Roses are sort of marketing themselves and growing their own brand. And this is how you do it. You appeal to those younger fans. You appeal to that different demographic. If you're a women's team, you appeal to the female audience. Like at the time, I said it at the time when we were at the stadium that what I really liked is, even though it's not my type of music, it's not the sort of thing that gets me going, not the sort of thing that, you know, I'd want to see and want to hear. But hearing things like Taylor Swift, hearing a bit of ABBA, hearing music that can be related to by the fans they're trying to attract, just helps create that atmosphere and helps create an event that more and more people are going to come to and think that's something that we should do more often.
Absolutely. You did mention how the going after the Lionesses effect. And I did agree with that. But what just popped in my mind right now is the halftime entertainment. That's a very American thing, isn't it? So maybe taking bits and pieces from what's been a resounding success and just putting it all together.
I think it is, but also when we have these big sort of flagship events, I guess, the Harlequins have always had a halftime performance. It always used to be the X Factor finalists, which were sometimes a little bit ropey. And more recently, they've had the Premiership final. They actually had Sophie Ellis-Bextor a few years ago performing at the Premiership final. I think it's something that, yes, it's a bit American, but I think it's sort of been adapted because it's not on the same level as like the halftime show is for the Super Bowl. No one's watching it on TV, but it's that little extra incentive to go there as a fan and be there to experience it.
I think that's what makes it better slightly as well. There's like another advertising prospect. Just that
But
little extra to go towards.
absolutely. But onto the action. 14 tries for England.
Oh.
That's crazy numbers. Obviously, we mentioned a hat trick for Abby Dow, a hat trick for Ellie Kildon. Actually, a moment on Ellie Kildon. She has been on fire this tournament. She had, so far in the four matches, she's picked up three of the player of the match medals, which if she doesn't get player of the tournament, I will be astounded. Six line breaks, 17 defenders beaten, and 351 meters carried. Who can do that? I don't know if that's ever happened in the men's or women's game. That's
No,
silly numbers.
I had a curry with my dad last night, and we were just talking about the game, and he was like, "Well, that Ellie Kildon, she is absolutely astonishing." I was like, "Well, it's great to hear you're tuning in as well." But like, wow, obviously, if he watches a lot of rugby, and he was saying she is just a magnificent player.
Oh, she's electric. Sarah Orchard, I believe, said on the commentary, and this was something that I heard, and I just thought I've got to write this down because it's incredible. It's the Women's Six Nations, some call it. Anyone else would say it's Ellie Kildon's world. I think,
You're all just playing in it.
yeah, I tweeted about it at the time during the match. I think Ellie Kildon might be a shoo-in for the best player in the world, men's or women's. I think
Absolutely. Currently, yeah.
she is on form, the best rugby player. I think she's unplayable. She's just that good.
Well, I remember, I think the only person who actually stopped her on Saturday was herself. There was one phase of period where she literally just danced through the entire Irish line, and there was like one more tackle. She'd step the tackle, and then she kind of like tripped herself up by accident. And then, yeah, and then we knocked her on, unfortunately. But not that it really mattered, did it?
No, of course she scored nine tries this tournament so far with a match to spare. That Marley Packer scored seven last year and claimed the top try scorer trophy. So yeah, it definitely is Ellie Kildon's
You know
world.
who World Player of the Year is going to be?
Oh, if it's not her, then something's wrong. Like
That's
maybe I'm saying this as a one-eyed English fan, but she's too good.
well, let's be honest. Like right now, there's no one better.
No, yeah, England had the bonus point wrapped up in 20 minutes. They beat the clock, scoring 88 points in 80 minutes. Like, this is England's eighth successive triple crown. They're 24th in total. Just like how? Obviously, we know England were one of the first to professionalize, and they've definitely reaped the benefits of it. And they've not done what some teams might have done, where they sort of turn pro and then just sort of stayed still, let everyone else catch up. They've gone pro and they've gone, no, we're just going to keep raising the level and raising the level. People have got to catch up with us. If they want to beat us, we're not just going to say, this is the bar, reach it. This is the bar, but it's moving.
I do think it helps that New Zealand are also kind of setting a benchmark as well outside of the, I know it's outside of the Six Nations, but they do set that benchmark that we really want to beat them, and they've beaten us in successive tournaments in the final.
Well, definitely. I think. Obviously, the World Cup is sort of the big desire for a team like the Red Roses. And going into the last World Cup, it's sort of everyone was sort of thinking, okay, it's a bit of a shoo-in that it's going to be the Red Roses versus the Black Ferns. But having those two teams where they can really build that intense rivalry across the world from each other, it is great to see that it's something that sort of expands beyond the Six Nations. And you've got the Six Nations and you've got the Pacific Four where you've got two of the biggest brands in women's rugby going head to head.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned it, Ireland, yeah, they weren't at the races, but without bringing up England too much, it was just a day for England. Ireland weren't awful, they just weren't England. Is that fair to say?
They're just, well, yeah, that is very fair to say. They are just streets behind. I think this France game coming up, I mean, that's going to be an absolute brilliant clash. I'm buzzing for it. We'll have to watch it after the Harlequins game.
But so moving on to Italy versus Scotland. Scotland got a 17-10 win, and it was their first win in Italy against Italy away since 1999. The first time this century they've done that is the first time since 2006 that they've won back-to-back away Six Nations matches. I think it's fair to say that Scotland are the surprise package of this tournament so far.
Them and Ireland, I'd say, have been an absolute pleasure to see, actually win some games and put on really decent performances. Like that Italy side is no easy task. And you saw, oh, that pack for the, I think it was their first, was it their first try with Linus Skeldon? That pack
Yeah.
was just their first try. That is, they just absolutely dominated through that, and Linus Skeldon just crashed over the whitewash. That was an emphatic statement.
Oh, that was a great try. And obviously, we've spoken about it in previous episodes a little bit. Helen Nelson, she got the first conversion, but her kicking's still been a little bit iffy. She obviously started the Six Nations really putting on a good performance in, I think it was her opening match. Slotting touchline conversions as if it was no one's business. And I was looking at her going, wow, like you're like really impressive kicker. And I don't know, it's dropped off recently. But I think I can claim a bit of, I can pat myself on the back a little bit for Alyssa Dinker's first try for
Yeah.
Italy, the only try for Italy. It was mentioned on the commentary. Italy's past three tries now have been her scoring. I wouldn't say she's sort of carrying the Italian team by any means, but she's a standout player, and I think she's sort of one of the best players in the world right now.
Well, you made a very good call putting her as your fantasy pick because, well, she reaped the rewards again. Thought she had a decent game. I don't know what happened to that Italy side. Maybe Scotland were just better.
I think it was one of those ones where it was just two good teams playing each other, I think. Like both teams made mistakes. Both teams had sloppy errors. Obviously, Chloe Rolle, she scored her try, and then at the very end ended up actually seeing a red card for her dangerous clean out, tipping over the Italian player over the ruck. Obviously, it's a little bit humorous when you see a bunker review in the 80th minute when you know it could be a yellow or it could be a red. It doesn't really matter, but still having due diligence to go around and go, yeah, this has to go to the bunker rather than just saying, yeah, it's a yellow card and then we'll upgrade it at the end. I found that quite humorous, but yeah, they're just two good sides. Obviously, Italy themselves butchered the opportunity at the very end as well, where they could have potentially taken it level, having the line out inside the Scottish 22 and just dropping it
That's
at
probably making
international
that
level.
kind of errors.
At international level, that shouldn't be happening, but obviously, it does sometimes,
Yeah.
and that threw
First
away a
time as
couple of
well.
points. But yeah, I think it was just, yeah, two strongish performances. They weren't like, we know that they're not on the Red Roses level yet, but they're both two teams that are really sort of pushing the boat a bit. They're sort of going, we want to play, we want to take it to the Red Roses one day. We want to show that we mean business.
Yeah, they don't look like they're going backwards, which is the most positive thing. I mean, we can talk about Wales, which we're going to jump onto next. They are going in opposite trends.
Absolutely. And I think obviously we've seen it with Italian men's rugby over the past few years where they're now sort of starting to properly catch up. Everyone was sort of saying they're building, and myself included, saying that they're building, that they're growing towards something. But the problem was all the other teams were just growing a little bit faster as well. And that now I think we're sort of starting to see Scotland and Italy for the women's game really start to sort of accelerate their growth, I guess.
Yeah, and similar trends to the men's as well.
And yeah, on to Wales versus France. You obviously touch upon Wales taking a backward step. We mentioned it last week. I certainly thought after seeing their performance against England, whilst the scoreline was a little bit of a blowout towards the end, they really took it to England to begin with, but Wales have just completely fallen off. They're staring down the barrel of a double wooden spoon, which, if you told a Welsh fan this 10 years ago,
It's a
it's
shame we
not.
have our resident Welshman in here, otherwise.
Yeah. Like, it's even as an Englishman, it's got me sort of dejected about the Welsh game. And obviously, we always talk about Wales. You know, we never want them to do well,
We
but
are sorry for them.
to see them in such a sorry state is more. It's just concerning for the state of rugby, let alone just the Welsh national side.
Absolutely, I agree. I just think that I've always grown up with that England-Wales rivalry, and to see the regression, and well, as what was it, Brian Moore said, there is a blank canvas for this women's game to grow. And if Wales are already taking steps backwards, it's just thoroughly disappointing because they have contracts in, but I think we worked it out, it was 32 contracts
Yeah.
on 18 to 25K, but they haven't built on that.
Yeah, and like we've seen that even beyond the national sides, Welsh rugby is struggling. Like if you look at the URC, you know, they've got three of their four sides are languishing in the bottom five of the tournament, of the league, with Cardiff in 12th, the Scarlets 14th, Dragons 15th. And only the Ospreys in seventh, which still, like, it's fine if that was your average Welsh side. But for your best team to be seventh, for a nation so proud as Wales, that's heads have to roll, surely.
Yeah, where do you even start? You clean out the top and then all the way down. Well, we got this new professional elite league in Wales coming, haven't we, next season?
That's only a revamped version of the Welsh Premiership. It's not. Hopefully it will improve the URC, but I think there's more fundamental like issues than just saying, oh, if we create this new league, we rebrand it,
Yeah,
you know, that will
it's
fix
coming from
everything.
grassroots.
But because even the Welsh Premiership rebrand has had its issues with teams with their applications saying we want to be part of this league, either being denied or accepted, and then I think it's Neath didn't get accepted, and yeah, like. What Welsh rugby, I think, is just at the moment rotten.
Yeah, rotten from the top all the way down. Needs a whole clear out.
But onto the match, we've mentioned that Wales just it's been a bit of a write-off of a tournament in a lot of ways. But France actually bookended the match with yellow cards. And should we talk about discipline? Because personally, I don't think the first shot was a red card. I think fair enough, it went to the bunker. It was sort of a shoulder to the neck. It's dangerous, but it's not a red card. Whereas the second one, I think, not that it really mattered for the scoreline, but Cal Fooey's yellow card probably should have been a red. It seemed like
It
she
was
could have.
head-to-head contact.
It was head-to-head contact. She could have ducked further. But I think discipline's been a really interesting one this tournament. Obviously, England have had the most amount of cards. I think they've had eight so far this tournament. Lucy Packer getting a yellow card for collapsing the mall.
That was just really stupid.
It was, but England have six cards. They've had four yellow cards, two red cards this tournament. Actually, Sarah Beckett will be available this weekend, actually, back from her ban after the Italy match. France and Italy are both in second with three yellow cards. Scotland have had a yellow and a red, and Ireland and Wales, credit to them, haven't had a card yet, but. Yeah,
You
to
could
me.
associate Wales with just pathetic performances at the same time.
Yeah, like to me that red like that yellow card should have been red, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I just think I've got a take on this, and I think, do you think that the better teams, obviously the Red Roses and France, their discipline is lacking because they're more dominant?
Perhaps, and maybe it's because, you know, they're coming under a bit more scrutiny, maybe. Not that the other teams aren't being scrutinized for what they're doing. I think there's definitely an argument for the dominance. Maybe if you're the more dominant you are, the bigger hits you're putting in, the more likely they are to ride up, more likely they are to be dangerous. Perhaps there's an argument for that. But I think if you're a professional athlete, you just have to do better with hits like that. You can't be hitting someone in the head.
But say when you're like 20 points up already, and
You
you're maybe, I suppose you're, as you said, you're a professional athlete, you can't be doing that. But sometimes concentration lapses, especially when you're a dominant side, I can definitely see that being a factor.
But at the same time, you don't need to take those risks. If you're 20 points up, you don't need to go, oh, well, I'm going to need to put this big hit in here.
No, you're absolutely right on that front. Should we
But
talk about that?
so with the scores, though, so one player that really stood out actually, because two both our scores were quite similar in a way, was Gria, because her first try, she. White whales were pounding away at the French 5 meter line.
Oh, this annoyed me.
They looked like they were prepared to go over, and that could have changed the entire game. And then they threw an interception, and fair play to
Sean
her for
Jones.
taking the interception, and just ran 100 meters unopposed to score. I think that was probably the point that sort of ended the game for Wales, and that was right at the start.
Yes, that was class from Grisé, but I genuinely think that that pass was utterly terrible. You've got a one-on-one on the wing, and it's literally you as the scrum half, and then that one-on-one. The first thing, if a ball is looped up in the air, the first thing the defender is thinking, I'm going to nab this. And that's exactly what happened. It's just, it was quite painful to watch, actually, because of all that like pressure inside the France 22.
It was, and then we look at her second try at right at the end. Wales are inside their own 22. They're sort of scrapping it about, and then another mistake, and she's got herself another try.
Mentality. Well, I don't know. I don't know where it went wrong.
Like, yeah, I think it's those small mistakes that are really killing Wales at the moment as well. That's the worst part, is that. On the grand scale, they're all good rugby players, obviously. So many of them are playing for Gloucester Hartbury, playing for Bristol. But they're just not, I don't know whether they're not gelling or they're not.
There must be something wrong with the coaching. I don't know.
It's
They
just all
haven't come in.
little, it's all small mistakes that are just, they're just piling up as well, that are just costing them at the big moments.
But that all comes down to coaching, doesn't it? You, when you train, you practice to get rid of those little mistakes.
Absolutely. But let's be positive. On to this
Yeah.
weekend.
Whoa, whoa,
First match of the
whoa,
weekend.
whoa. Before we go on to this weekend, can we have a little shout out to Bourdon Sansousse?
Go on then.
I thought she played pretty well. Started off the game emphatically, using her brain the at what was it, at the quick line out. And that's how France scored the first try. And perhaps that's what, as we said, there were certain points of the game where you just killed Wales off. That first lapse of concentration from the Wales defence, knowing that the ball's out, it's France's ball. Bourdon Sansu's capitalised and that set it up.
Absolutely.
So,
And yeah, she was, of course, your fantasy pick from
yeah,
last week.
that's why
So,
I'm bigging it up.
of course, you have to pick it up. But on to this coming weekend, Wales versus Italy. Wales are, we mentioned Wales are rotten to the core, but they're playing at the Principality. Obviously, they've been playing at Cardiff Arms Park right next door. And now they're taking it to the big stadium. And I personally don't know how many tickets they've sold yet, but if you're taking your games to the big stadiums, you can't be fighting for the wooden spoon in that match.
You can't be
Obviously,
playing like that the week before.
it'll be a huge occasion for all the players involved, and I'm sure they'll make the most of it. But yeah, to be fighting for the wooden spoon in front of a hopefully packed out Millennium Stadium, it's just not a good look for Welsh rugby.
No, your best argument was probably to have the first game at the Principality,
Quite
which was
possible.
actually an incredible game as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I hope next year they might look at it and go, actually, whatever week they're playing England, they're going to go, we're playing this at the Principality, in the same way that England this year went, we're going to take this to Bristol so we can get as many Welsh fans down. I hope that they can sort of, like I say, return the favour. They can sort of do the same thing and make that their big game, because that's a game they'll probably want to build a rivalry out of in the years to come, that always historically was a rivalry and is a rivalry in the men's game.
But I do think we can't have a repeat of what happened on Saturday. England, Ireland, and Ireland just got absolutely battered.
Absolutely. And especially Italy has to be a winnable game for Wales. If there's obviously we've mentioned their progress throughout this tournament and beforehand. And yeah, like if they don't win this match, and particularly if they get blown out by Italy, then that's a serious wake-up call required.
But no,
And
big.
next up is Ireland versus Scotland. Ireland are taking this match to Ravenhill in Belfast. I think, yeah, again, similar to England playing Wales in Bristol. It's so good to see Ireland sort of taking their games around. They've played in Cork, they played everywhere around Ireland, and to be able to say geographically, this is a close match that we can get quite a few Scottish fans down to. I think that's such a smart idea and such a good way to grow the game.
The fact they can do that as well, because like currently with the men's team, you couldn't do that. You can't really go out of the Aviva, could you?
No, and we mentioned obviously there's political reasons why Ireland might not necessarily want to take matches outside the Aviva, particularly within Dublin, with the Aviva being the second biggest stadium in Ireland behind Croke Park. Obviously, Ireland have played there in the past, and Leinster are set to play Northampton there in a sellout, which will be huge with what 82,300 fans all crammed into Croke Park will be a huge spectacle to see for a European semi-final. But
There was
yeah.
that issue, wasn't there? That is literally down the road from
Yeah,
it's starting to be a home tie, and it's actually down the road.
it is a couple of miles away, but yeah, obviously, yeah, we say Ireland can't really travel in the way that maybe they used to, perhaps with the redevelopment of stadiums in Northern Ireland for the Euros, that might change, but I'm not sure it will, because obviously the GAA are quite protective over their grounds as well. So,
Well, that's like
yeah.
what I was actually referring to is how good it is that it's kind of in its smaller phases, so they can keep
Oh.
going around smaller grounds
But
and pack them out.
yeah, exactly. So to be able to go around these smaller grounds and sort of pack them out and get those good crowds is a great way to grow the game, in the same way that the Red Roses have, and that actually Marley Packer mentioned again in the press conference, saying that, you know, we've been able to go around and that's where we've built our fan base. I think that's something that teams should follow. And speaking of that, France versus England in Bordeaux, they've announced 22,000 tickets have been sold so far. So it'll be a huge occasion. It's set to be a French record crowd for a French home match, which for a Grand Slam showdown, is there anything better? Obviously, with my one-eyed Harlequins fan, you know, Bordeaux looked like a great day out. So yeah, 22,000 packed in at Bordeaux. Fantastic. What more could you
Yeah,
want?
last day out. Obviously, some brilliant rugby on display as well. Finally, we're seeing the best two teams of the Six Nations. It's what everyone's been waiting for. It's the reason.
I think
Sorry.
it's a really smart way of setting up the tournament as well. You know, I'm not a big, if this happened in the men's game, I wouldn't be so happy with it, because we know how tight the men's tournament can be and how it can all change year on year. But I think we all knew that, you know, France England was going to be the showdown at the end. So I don't see a problem with setting up to be that showdown, because then you're generating interest throughout the tournament. You're saying, you're creating this storyline of this is going to be the Grand Slam showdown. Or if one of the teams loses, then you go, wow, this Grand Slam showdown's already been decided, or there's a redemption arc. I think that's quite a clever way of doing it, don't you think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think as you correctly said with the men's, you can't really predict what's going to happen. So putting like what you think is going to be the big Grand Slam showdown is like obviously England were a surprise shot this year. Could have
Yeah.
won it. You
And
can't really do that with the men's, but with obviously the women's is still, I don't want to be like patronizing, but it still is in a growing stage. We're trying to build more than just a game here. We're building a whole narrative behind it as well to get more fans down. It's the perfect way to do it.
definitely. And of course, England are currently sat on 20 points with bonus points in every match. France are on 19, just 1 point behind. So it will be whoever wins the tournament, essentially. It is essentially a Six Nations final. And then you have Scotland on 8 points, and then Italy and Ireland both on in fourth and fifth, both on 6 points. and then Wales at the bottom with just the 1 point. So yeah, huge, huge weekend of games for everyone involved, really. And on to the fantasy segment. So we've all made mistakes. Myself and Ricky both actually forgot to
Really?
set our teams until we were sat in the press box at Twickenham going about 10 minutes before kickoff going, Christ, I've not set my team. I need to rush onto this right now.
And then I forgot to set a captain.
Yeah, we both forgot to set captains, which I do find it annoying how, you don't get a pop-up saying, oh, you've got to set a captain. I think
Yeah.
that might improve the experience, but it's also my fault for not setting a captain because I go through every week and just delete all my players and just start again. So, it's the consequences of what you reap. Ellie killed on
Oh.
regardless. She scored 126 points without being captain, which crazy. I captained Alyssa Dinka and she got me 98 points. I
Captain
did.
hold on Sun Tzu's 26 points. Bloody hell.
But she still had a great game.
She did. I just think I made the mistake of going, yeah, scrum off.
I did select Rosie Galligan. I believe you did as well.
I did.
And of course, we got no
We
points
got
for
notified that in the warm-up, and we
that.
just
Yeah, we just completely ignored
completely
it.
forgot.
Right.
Let's
So,
just say the occasion was big for us, and
yeah.
we were engrossed by the Twickenham atmosphere that was building.
Yeah, let's go with that one. I'm not sure if you've seen this. I've actually overtaken you. I'm now up to second. You're down in third now. And yeah, let's talk about Sam again because he scored
Oh, 90.
568 points this week, which he's just been winning every single week. And I can make this worse for us. He hasn't changed his team since round two.
Yeah. The thing is, he's done everything you need to, right?
Yeah.
His wait, let's look at his, but yeah, he got Abidal. Actually, to be fair, he's just got the England three of Abidal, Meg Jones, and Ellie Kildon. And he's obviously captained Ellie Kildon, which got him 252 points.
Of course, is it just Hayes he's got in prop as well, just earning him loads of points.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's been a big week for him, and fair play to him.
Yeah. Well, that's what are we saying for next week then, Henry?
My fantasy pick, I think I've picked her once already, and I'm gonna pick her again. And you might kick me for saying this. I'm gonna be boring. It's Ellie Kildon's world, and we're just living in it.
Fair play. I can't really argue with that, to be honest. When she's getting you points like that, what is even the point?
126 of them, that's the
Yeah, no.
point.
There we go. Well, you know what? I want to be different, just but I can't. I'm gonna go with Abidal.
Knew it was going to be the case.
Yeah, I'm
It was
sorry.
never
Everyone's
in doubt, just like your team name.
yeah, literally.
So that wraps up the fantasy segment for this week. And onto the news. So we've only got a few pieces of news this week. We'll start off with Adam Radwan, the England internationally capped winger, plays for Newcastle. They've lost every match this season. He's been given permission by the consultant director of rugby, Steve Diamond, to give his hand at sevens. What do we think of that?
I think it's class. I mean, Newcastle are having a shocking season. I think to want to try your hand at something else within the sport is not to be blamed whatsoever, especially with the Olympics coming up and we got potential qualification.
And it was actually announced yesterday that England have now, oh, Team GB, sorry, now know that their opponents for the repechage tournament have been confirmed. And it looks like, I believe, they might be facing South Africa if all things go to plan for both sides in the semi-final, which likely could determine the tournament and determine that final qualification spot. But yeah, exactly that. I think it's a real positive, particularly as the season comes to an end. Newcastle are safe from relegation for another year with the lack of relegation in this year's tournament. Yeah, like he's on the cusp of the England squad. He was involved a couple of years ago, and he's sort of been in the international wilderness since then. he's a quality player, and I think this is something that could really diversify his game and help take him to the next level and actually help him knock on the door for England in the future.
Yeah, no, absolutely buzzing for him, to be fair. After what must have been a very dejecting season.
And of course, the Champions Cup, it was announced, is now actually set to clash with the FA Cup final, both matches taking place on the same day, with the Champions Cup set to kick off at 2:45 and the FA Cup set to kick off at 3. And it's been moved back to 3 o'clock under police guidance, which, with them both in London, both on ITV, it is causing problems. And Champions Cup, the EPCR or ECPR have come out and said, we're not moving the tour, we're not moving the kickoff time. We've had to agree this with something like nine different broadcasters to get this all confirmed. We can't move it, particularly with the prospect of it being possibly an all French final. Fans, players have got to get back home on a Sunday night. That would just be impossible if they pushed it later, and even if they pushed it earlier in the day, it'd still be problematic.
Just think it's stupid, isn't it? I think it was the FA Cup that initially had it in June.
Yeah, the FA Cup moved their slot to have it earlier in the season, and now they're
That's
pushing
just
back
totally
kickoff time as
stupid
well.
because the FA Cup has never been in June.
See,
And but what shocked me the most is the fact that the what was it? The Champions League finals in June. I think
yeah.
we got. This is, I don't want, without banging on too much about football, the Euros is on, and that starts in June as well. I don't know what the hell is going on with planning, but it's utterly ridiculous.
I don't want to be that guy that's like, oh, rugby was there first, but rugby was there for, like, if one match is going to be on on ITV4, stick the FA Cup on ITV4. If they can't sort their fans out, if it's their fault that they've had to change kickoff time, they should have to deal with the consequences. I know that won't happen, and the
Yeah.
Champions Cup will be on ITV4, and the FA Cup will be on ITV1, but
And viewing figures are going to suffer.
it's just incredibly frustrating as a fan of rugby that external forces are limiting the potential growth of the sport.
Absolutely, mate.
And of course, the other big bit of news, again sticking to football, was, should we let you explain this one, as you've tweeted it?
Well, so Nottingham Forest put out an absolute bizarre tweet that has clearly come from the owners saying that there was three penalties missed by a VAR referee who was a Luton fan and that he shouldn't have been on the VAR in the position because obviously Forest and Luton are battling for relegation and to survival. And now somehow this conversation has traversed over to rugby and it's a absolute pain on the backside, if I'm honest with you. Like reading this, was it Carl Dixon? He's going to be refereeing Saturday's game, Harlequins versus Northampton. And obviously, there are links, previous links, and all
As a previous Harlequin scrum half, actually playing alongside
that.
a number of the Harlequins players.
But it personally, for me, English football refereeing is in its absolute worst state. English rugby refereeing by no means is anywhere near there.
Well, I do think it's an interesting debate that should be had, though, because obviously, he's refereed Harlequins in the past, and there's been complaints from opposition fans, but it's never really been anything serious. It's not like he's decided a game or been clearly biased towards Harlequins. And if we want to get too political, if there's any match he wouldn't be biased against, or perhaps that he would be biased against, is Harlequins Northampton, with his brother Lee used to playing, having previously played for Northampton. So as a former Harlequin, perhaps there's an argument that, he maybe shouldn't be the primary referee of a match like this. I think that's a fair argument to an extent,
No.
but I don't think it's nearly on the same level that football has it. And we've seen referees have been able to put aside their, I guess, biases, if you want to call it that, put that aside with Luke Pearce, for example. Not to say he shouldn't be refereeing against Wales, but he was born in Pontypool. Obviously, he's contracted by the RFU, so he's designated as a as an English ref. Same as historically, we've had JP Doyle. I'm pretty sure he's refereed Ireland. He's an Irishman, but he was contracted to the RFU, so he was an English ref. And yes, yeah, so I think it's not on the same level as football is. I think people are sort of just jumping on bandwagons here. But I think there's definitely an interesting conversation to be had.
Whoever gets you a few clicks isn't really honest review of that.
And of course, on this match, we will actually be at the big summer kickoff at Twickenham
Oh, yes.
for Harlequins versus Northampton. The accreditation came through the other day, which is always a good sign. And yeah, it's set to be an absolute corker.
An
Top of the table
absolute
clash.
bomb. Let's hope it's a bit more competitive than the one we witnessed last week.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to having to keep up with this match. Obviously, it will be a high scoring match. Harlequins, if they lose, they can probably wave goodbye to the top four this season. Northampton riding high at the top of the Premiership, both sides through to the European semi-finals. It's going to be a classic.
Absolutely, mate. I mean, I don't know how you're going to keep your impartiality. Talking about impartiality.
Well, thank you for listening. Thank you, Ricky, for joining me today.
Course, mate, all the time. Well, literally.
And this has been The Maul from Grace. You can catch us next time on Spotify or on the Sports Gazette website. Goodbye.